Joining us from New York is John Penneries. He runs Mac for the Blind. We have had some numerous discussions about sort of a little bit about Windows versus Mac, and I think there's a lot of curiosity in this room about the Mac. John runs, I say, his own company called Mac for the Blind, does provide training, and he also is one of the people who is on the Triple Click Home podcast. That is a podcast run by the Saratech folks, and they talk about all things Apple. Without further ado, I want to introduce John Penneries from New York. We're doing this on Skype.
Oh, thanks for having me. I just want to first thank everybody for listening. My company is Mac for the Blind, and I do iOS and Mac training. I've been doing Apple products training for about 4 or 5 years now as far as a career goes, but I've been supporting and doing some training ever since 2006 or 2007 on the Mac. I also do some tech support stuff. I'm an Apple certified support professional for Lion, OS X Lion and OS X Mountain Lion. I do contracted work for several states as well as work with private clients as well, both on Mac and iOS. As far as Windows versus Mac or Mac versus Windows go, it seems to be the eternal discussion I've been part of and I've witnessed has, taken place over the last few years. And in the beginning, even when, VoiceOver was introduced to the Mac in 2005 in OS 10.4 Tiger, there was still a lot of uncertainty and a lot of mistrust of Apple and how accessible VoiceOver was for a Mac and how if Apple was going to continue to support it. There was a lot of myths and rumors about Apple doing it strictly as a legal response so they wouldn't get sued because of the ADA and all these other things that have sort of been bandied about over the years. What I'd like to just discuss is the perspective of the Mac. As far as accessibility goes, I'm not going to say one platform is better than the other. I'm just going to tell you what the strengths of the Mac platform is and, the weaknesses of the platform as well compared to Windows. And also give you some tips from somebody who really has switched from Windows to the Mac. I still have a Windows laptop and a desktop around here that I use, but solely at this point only for keeping my skills sharp and for providing the occasional side job for window eyes training or for system access training. But as of 2008, I have entirely switched over everything I do, personal and business, to solely using a Mac because of its stability and its ease of use. It's a switch that you have to consciously decide to make. You have to really decide and be committed to making such a switch. And you also have to understand a few basic things. Now, before I get into the whole switching aspect, let me just first say a few things about the status of Mac accessibility. And as of OS 10.9 Mavericks, which is the most recent operating system that Apple has released for the Mac, at this point, it's pretty safe to say that as far as your everyday tasks, the tasks that a user is going to want to do, email, web browsing, and editing text, you have equal access whether you choose a Mac or a Windows PC. Now, the first reaction that some Windows people will give you is, well, what about Microsoft Office? I hear that Microsoft Office is not accessible on the Mac, and that's true. This has nothing to do with Apple. This has nothing to do with VoiceOver. This is strictly a Microsoft choice not to make the content area of Microsoft Word or PowerPoint or Excel on the Mac accessible to VoiceOver. It's something that can be easily fixed in the Cocoa coding of the applications. They simply have chosen not to do so. However, with that being the case, there are several ways that one can skin the proverbial cat as far as getting access to Microsoft formatted documents and spreadsheets and being able to save in those formats. So to simply say, well, I can't recommend a Mac to a client or I can't buy a Mac because I don't have access to Office is really a very weak statement because of the fact that particularly as of Mavericks, iWorks, which is the Apple equivalent to Office, it's become extensively accessible as far as spreadsheets and document access goes. And you can both import and export Microsoft Word formats, as well as if you're using spreadsheets, Excel spreadsheets. So at this point in time, I can't really accept people saying that you can't use a Mac because you don't have access to Office documents, and that's what the rest of the world uses. The other reality that a lot of Microsoft supporters don't want to face is that the enterprise landscape has changed over the last couple of years, where Microsoft is not the only girl at the dance, so to speak. Apple has made a lot of inroads into enterprise as well as other third-party companies, and Office's king status as far as being the tool of choice in the enterprise world is slipping dramatically, especially over the last two market years. As far as internet browsing goes, whether you're using JAWS, WindowEye System Access, you're going to be able to do the same types of things on the Mac using Safari and VoiceOver, or using Google Chrome and VoiceOver. The new kid on the block over the last year or so is Firefox for the Mac, that the Mozilla people have been making a conscious effort of increasing accessibility to VoiceOver. It's still a little sluggish in certain areas, but if you have the newer Macs with SSD, the sluggishness is really not that noticeable at all. And I use Firefox extensively. I kind of switch back and forth between using Safari, Google Chrome, and Firefox, depending on the situation. So you do have three web browsers that you can choose between. Email, Apple Mail, is completely accessible. In a lot of ways, it's easier to use than something like Outlook. It also gives you a lot more spam control built in than Outlook gives you. You're not necessarily requiring to rely on a third-party application for junk mail management. And again, completely accessible with VoiceOver. You can do everything, any kind of mail task that you can do on a Windows machine, you can do on the Mac. The thing, though, to remember is that the Mac is a different operating system. VoiceOver is a different screen reader. If you're going to approach the Mac with your JAWS or WindowEye or System Access or Dolphin mindset in place, you're going to have problems. You got to approach the Mac and VoiceOver as new entities, meaning that, yes, there are going to be parallels, and even when I train Windows people, I make sure that I use certain reference points and comparisons simply so that people understand that if I'm trying to make a comparison, like, for example, the Finder on the Mac, I will say to people, well, it's very much like My Computer or Windows Explorer on the PC. So I try to use parallels, but as far as it goes, you know, the one thing I always hear from people is, well, in JAWS, I was able to blah, blah, blah. And I stop people right away. And I say, well, you're not using JAWS now. So you got to get that out of your mind first. We'll find a similar way to do things, but you're using VoiceOver in the Mac. Now, the other part of that equation is, I think that a lot of us who went through the process of teaching ourselves or having been taught to use Windows screen readers, and I taught myself how to use Window Bridge back in the day, if those of you remember Window Bridge 2000, Slimware Window Bridge, JAWS, WindowEye, System Access, it was torture. It was really difficult to learn Windows and to learn your screen reader simultaneously. It was a lot of frustration. It was a slow process at times. You were probably swearing more in the process of doing that in the course of a couple of hours than you probably did in a regular basis for a month. So my question then to people is, why do we tend to forget about that struggle and we expect that the Mac and VoiceOver is going to be a piece of cake? The reality is, again, you're learning a new screen reader and a new operating system, so you have to approach it with that mindset and expect that there is going to be a learning curve. Now, granted, if you have extensive screen reader experience and you've worked with a Windows machine for a long time, your process of adjusting is going to be a bit easier than a complete newbie to a computer because you do have the terminology in the background. But even with that said, you're still going to be facing a learning curve, and you're still going to be facing to have to think differently. And I don't mean to use that as a pun, because I know Apple uses that as a sort of a credo, but you really do have to think different when you're approaching the Mac and VoiceOver and not expecting it to behave like your PC or like your Windows screen reader of choice. So as long as you go with that knowledge in mind and you have an open mind and you're willing to really sit down and, you know, make the change, or even if you just want to learn the Mac for the sake of learning Mac, you're still going to do Windows. You still have things in Windows that you like to do. you'll be able to learn the Mac as long as you approach it by keeping the things that I just mentioned in place. There's two other areas as far as Windows goes to keep in mind on the Mac. If you still need access to certain Windows applications that simply don't have a Mac equivalent, you can still get access to them even if you decide to go 100% Macintosh. And the two ways are using what's called Bootcamp, which allows you to split or partition your hard drive and run a separate independent Windows operating system on your Mac. So in other words, you would dual boot, either go to the Mac or go to the Windows side, whatever you need at a given time. And there's also what they call virtual machines, and the product of choice some people may have heard of, it's called VMware Fusion. What that does is it allows you to run an instance of Windows inside of the Mac platform. So if you need to have access to, you know, Kurzweil 1000 or Duxbury or something that you really do need to have at Windows, you know, to be able to use, you could do that within the virtual machine by still running your Mac. So, you know, that is sort of the lifeline I can sort of offer to people who are really scared, you know, quote unquote, scared to cut the proverbial cord entirely with Windows. Now, as far as weaknesses go on the Mac side, I sort of touched on one. At the moment, as far as Braille translation goes, there is really not a Mac equivalent to a Duxbury. There are some alternatives. There is the Louis Braille translator. There is Index, who makes Braille printers, has a Mac translator as well. And there's a few other ones out there. There's a free, an open source project that I think it's called Braille Blaster. But the reality is, if you are used to using Duxbury and doing your Braille translations through Duxbury and interfacing with your embosser, until Duxbury comes out with their Mac version next year, which they are working on, there is currently, I have to say, without debate, that there is no equivalent to Duxbury on the Mac as far as that goes. You could still do Braille. If you really, you know, don't want to use Duxbury, you could still do it. I honestly do Brailing from the Mac. I use the Louis Braille translator, and another application that Index developed, because I do have a Index Braille embosser. But I have to say honestly that if you are a Duxbury person, that's one of the weaknesses. Now, the other one is not so much a weakness. It's just more of a matter of preference or what you're used to. And that has to do with OCR. There is no full-blown equivalent to a Kurzweil 1000 or an OpenBook on the Mac. We do have OCR products. There is a product that Ciratek produces. There's a Mac version of the DocuScan Plus application that runs beautifully on the Mac and does really good OCR as well as PDF conversion. But if you're looking for the bells and whistles that Kurzweil 1000 offers or that OpenBook offers, you really don't have a Mac alternative. There are also mainstream off-the-shelf OCR applications like Abbey Fine Reader Plus or what they call VueScan, V-U-E scan, for the Mac as well, if you don't want to spend the kind of money on, let's say, on like a DocuScan Plus. So those alternatives do exist. Now, just as a side note, as far as application pricing goes, the one thing you will find in the Mac world is that the third-party applications out there to get other tasks done tend to cost a lot less than the Windows equivalent. You know, you're talking about $9 applications, maybe $10, $15 in the Mac App Store. And if you go the third-party route through websites, you know, maybe $19, $29 at the most for a lot of different Mac applications. You know, I'm talking about things like audio converters or video converters. You know, a lot of Mac applications are free that are out there as well. The point that I'm trying to make here is that at this stage in 2013, you know, November of 2013, I really would have to say that Mac accessibility has pretty much got to the point where it's overall equivalent to Windows. So, you know, whatever you want to do on Windows, other than the really rare there are situations where people say, well, I use this application because this is what my company
uses. Then if it's a real specialty third-party application, then yes, you're probably not going to find a Mac equivalent. But overall, for everything, just about everything else you can accomplish in Windows, you're going to be able to accomplish on the Mac at this point.
When you talk about the Mac, do you also mean a specific piece of hardware, or is this strict preference only to software? Or, you know, is there an option to use it on the PC blocks? That's something I never been sure of.
You have two sort of parts. You have the hardware and the software. Now, the Mac, meaning the Macintosh computer, could be a Mac desktop like an iMac or a Mac Pro, or you could be talking about a laptop like a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air. So that's the hardware component when you talk about Macintosh computers. Mac OS X, whether you talk about Mavericks or Mountain Lion or Lion, is the actual name for the operating system. So it would be the equivalent of like a Windows 7 or a Windows 8. So that's the operating system that runs. Now, on the Mac side, you really only have Macintosh computers that run the Mac software. So it's not like Windows where, you know, you can have a Dell, you can have an HP, you can have a Toshiba, you know, a different hardware manufacturers that run the Windows OS. With the Mac, you're going to get Apple products, which is either a Macintosh computer running Mac OS X. Hardware costs are slightly higher than, like, for example, you can get, let's say, a MacBook Air for just under $1,000, which is the really tiny Mac laptop, which is about the size of the netbooks. And you could probably get, you know, Windows laptops in the $500-$600 range. But remember, there's the old expression, what you get's what you pay for. The other end of the equation is, remember that VoiceOver is free. There's no cost, so you're not paying $1,200 for JAWS or $900 for WindowEyes on top of your computer cost, and you're also not dealing with viruses and malware that you deal with on Windows. So, you know, you take that as you want.
My name's Jerry, and I use Excel extensively in the Windows environment. I use it for formulas and all sorts of things. And my wife recently jumped ship and bought a MacBook Pro. She is sighted, and she loves it. But she found that when she opened Excel documents with it, even with the Mac version of Office, the documents and the data was there, but the formulas were gone. So my question is, from the standpoint of productivity when it comes to that sort of thing, are we there yet?
Does she have the latest version of Numbers? Because they rewrote Numbers to version 5 now. Version 4. So I'm not sure. I haven't dealt. Let me put it this way. The formulas that I have used as far as my Excel spreadsheets go back in the days when I was doing my invoices and some of my costs, expenses and stuff back for the old company, I kind of did a little experimenting when the new version of Numbers came out, because they were talking about in the accessibility community, you know, the community for beta testing, you got to try Numbers out. It's, you know, there's extensive changes. And I was able to open up all my old spreadsheets and my old MS Word documents, and all of the formulas and tables and stuff did come over. So I don't know if it's specific circumstances or types of formula. I would really need to know more details of exactly what business she's in, what types of spreadsheets she's dealing with.
Well, there were spreadsheets from an older version of Excel, not real old, but maybe like 2007.
The ones I've been doing is 2004 and 2007, I believe. Or 2003, I'm sorry, 2003 and 2007. Because I don't have 2010.
Task for task. Once you've learned the Mac stuff, do you feel that you can basically account for speed issues so that, like, I'm a fairly good Word user. If I were to switch to a Mac equivalent, will the speed eventually get up there?
Absolutely. I just had somebody this morning I was having this conversation with. What has fascinated me personally about my Mac experience is when I go back and I do try to do tasks on Windows, and understand that it's not like I stopped using Windows, so you can't say to me, well, it's just because you don't use Windows as much as you used to use it in the past. I still use Windows a lot because, as I said, I do still train people on it, and I still try to keep my Windows, you know, skills sharp. I'm always updating, you know, my WindowEyes and my system access. I don't carry a JAWS SMA anymore. I'm always amazed by how frustratingly cumbersome it is to do a lot of the tasks in Windows that I can do in a snap on the Mac and with such greater ease. And I don't know when I reached that point where the balance sort of shifted.
Could you give us a couple of examples?
Yeah, I'm just going to say, one of the things that I would like you to elaborate on, and some examples would be a good way of doing it, would be how conceptually the Mac system is different from Windows, and what kinds of examples you can cite that would demonstrate the greater ease of use.
There's a lot more consistency in applications in the Mac as far as what you expect, you know, menu structure, interfaces, than you get in Windows. Now, obviously, third-party applications are always an adventure like they are in Windows, so you know, you are going to have instances where you're going to get a third-party application that reads really nicely when you read the description. It's you kind of say to yourself, oh, man, this is exactly, you know, what I'm looking for. And I'll give you a great example. I was looking for a converter for Audible.com books. And I was doing a Google search, and I found a couple of free applications for the Mac side. And they seemed to do exactly what it was that I wanted to do. Well, when I downloaded them, I was disappointed to find that the accessibility was just not there. There were unlabeled buttons, basically the types of things you're going to find, whether it's Windows or the Mac. However, I kept persisting, and I kept persisting, and I found a third application that was also free, downloaded it, and it was completely accessible. And I could do the tasks that I needed to do within 30 seconds. The thing about Mac applications is when you've experienced one, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be able to do other applications. Like when I teach people, we start with, let's say, mail. I teach the person how to use mail, how to, you know, navigate mailboxes, you know, how to do their messages, et cetera, et cetera. The knowledge that you pick up can be very easily applied to the next application because there's so much consistency involved of what you find as far as the voiceover interface goes, working in conjunction with the application interface. An example of speed-wise, I hear a lot of people, when they first get over onto the Mac, there's a lot of grumbling and mumbling and complaining about web browsing. And I always hear people say initially, you know what, I was really able to, you know, web browse a lot faster in Windows. When I was using JAWS, I could do this, this, and this. And when I was using Windows, Windows-wise, I could do this, this, and this. And I don't get it. I don't understand why some of you Mac guys say that, you know, web browsing is so much easier on the Mac. And the answer to that is because people who come over to the Mac don't learn how to use VoiceOver effectively. It's the same thing. I could turn around and say that if I didn't know the keyboard shortcuts and some of the things that WindowEyes and JAWS have to offer, I would say that you know, Windows web browsing is really cumbersome and slow for me. But the fact of the matter is that I can, for example, if I go to my banking website, I want to log into my banking website, I want to check my balance, my last transactions over the last 10 days, and I've done a side-by-side comparison using Firefox and Internet Explorer 10 on the Windows side and using Safari or Google Chrome on the Mac side. And I can do those tasks a heck of a lot faster and with a lot less stress on the Mac side than I can do on the Windows side. Because the keyboard commands, I just find them to be a lot easier. And now with the new version of Safari 7 and VoiceOver, it just tends to read the web pages a lot better. I'm trying to think, there was another thing that I did the other day. I was doing something on Windows. I'm trying to remember what website it was. Amazon? Maybe it was Amazon. For whatever the reason, it was just so much easier to find what I was looking for on the Mac. It just took me at least a quarter of the less time to find what I was looking for, to get narrow it down to just a couple of choices, and then go make the purchase on the Mac side than I did on the Windows side. It's learning your screen reader. It's understanding the shortcuts, the different ways to get a task done. And if you know them as well, and you know, if you keep using something over and over again, so it's like when you first learn Windows and you first learn JAWS or WindowEyes or System Access, you didn't know the keyboard shortcuts. Everything took forever to do, but you slowly taught yourself and you learned and they became part of your mindset. Sort of your muscle memory. You don't even think about the commands you're doing. You just do it because it's second nature to you. The same thing happens. You persist at the Mac and the keyboard shortcuts just fall into place. The thing that you notice is that you're not, the way, I guess the best way to say this is that when you're dealing with Windows, you find yourself fighting more with the operating system itself and just its oddities than you do on the Mac. The Mac, you tend to get your work done a lot more than you are fighting with the operating system. And I think that the gentleman who was talking about his wife having switched over to the Mac, I bet you if you asked her, even from the sighted perspective, she will say the same thing. On a Mac, you actually do work. On the Windows side, you sort of have to fight to get there to do the work. And that's really the thing that I've noticed. I spend far less time fighting with my screen reader, dealing with crashes, dealing with all the stupidity that I had to deal with on Windows. On the Mac, I just want to do something. Zoom, I'm off and going.
VoiceOver is available on any Mac. That means if my friend has a Mac, I don't have to buy JAWS to learn to use it. What's available out there? I know you have your website, besides that, what are other resources and shortcut key lists? What's out there for me to just pick up a file, sit down with my friend's Mac, and go to town?
As far as resources go, the Apple website, apple.com/accessibility, has a lot of resources and links to a lot of resources pages out there. Obviously, not to plug myself, but I take a lot of pride in trying to put as many podcasts and documents that will help people, including like the VoiceOver user guides, Mac OS X keyboard shortcuts, you know, my own podcast, as well as links to, you know, Triple Click Home and Mac Accessibility and all the other podcasts that are out there. There's other places like AppleViz, AppleViz.com. A lot of people think of that as simply an iOS resource, but it's also a Mac OS X resource as well. The one weakness that is definitely, I will say unequivocally at this point, is the lack of a true Mac tutorial, but that is something that hopefully will be addressed in the near future.
Price difference between DocuScan Plus and Abbey Fine Reader?
$299 for DocuScan Plus, $99 for Abbey Fine Reader, $49 for VUE scan, VUE scan.
What are we losing for the cheaper? What are we paying for when you pay $300 as opposed to $49 for something?
It's probably more or less because it's written specifically for blindness. You can take it as you will, but remember that VooScan is a mainstream app. You know, sighted people use it, so the market out there, they can support a $49 price tag.
I've been reading with the new mail program on Mavericks that there's been some issues with Gmail. So have you tried various workarounds or other mail clients to use Gmail with a Mac?
They have supposedly fixed it with the last update. As of a couple of days ago, I've been reading that a lot of those issues have actually been fixed by Apple or addressed by Apple. I'm a Gmail user, but I don't use the IMAP side of Gmail. I do it through POP. So I haven't really had the problems that other people have been reporting, but from what I've read, I think it was either Wednesday or Thursday, they had an update for mail that addressed all the Gmail stuff.
I'm a new Mac user myself, and one of the things that the screen readers in Windows offer to one extent or another is a good help system, so that when you enter in a particular area or there's a particular control, you can get some context-sensitive help as to what to do. I have not found that as true within the help system for the Mac. What am I missing for VoiceOver?
There's actually a lot of help available on the Mac. You have VoiceOver Hints, which should be turned on by default.
Yeah, I did that.
Where when you're on a controller and you're on an item, if you wait a couple of seconds, VoiceOver usually gives you a pretty good indication of what you're supposed to do at that point. You know, whether you're supposed to interact with that area, you know, whether you're supposed to VO control option space on it, et cetera, et cetera. You also have VOH, control option H, which is the overall help menu on the Mac that gives you the, I guess you call it the overview of all of the different help areas that you can reach, like commands help, keyboard help. You could reach the getting started guide, you know, if you want to actually read the quote-unquote VoiceOver manual. So there's a lot of ways to approaching the help. It's just sometimes you just need a little pointer on how to get into the right direction. It's funny, people tease me as far as my training goes, because two areas that I spend a lot of time addressing with a new user, because I feel that a lot of trainers sort of gloss over it, is the help facilities on the Mac. I really like to spend almost an entire lesson alone going over how to get help and how to use the help system. And the other thing that I really get crazy about, that people say I get crazy about, they call me Mr. Finder, because I spend a lot of time addressing the file and folder structure on the Mac and really trying to ingrain the user into understanding how to access their files and folders. Believe it or not, a lot of sighted people don't even know what the Finder is on the Mac.
Say I go out and I get a Mac, and I have like years of storing Windows documents and Outlook contacts and PDF files and all of that. You said you can import over like an Excel spreadsheet, but if you have all of these documents that you have. Can you port them over? And if you can, how complicated is that process?
It's actually can be very uncomplicated, depending on what you want, how you want to approach it. They have something called Windows Migration Assistant that if you want to do it on your own, you could connect your Windows PC directly to your Mac, or you can do it over a network and use the Windows Migration Assistant actually to just have everything get imported over, your contacts, your documents, just everything be, you know, copied to your Mac. Or if you want to take sort of the easy way out, purchase the Mac at an Apple store and let them do the Windows migration for you. I know a few people that have done it this way, and they've had no problems. I've also helped people do manual transfers. Some people don't have the ability to connect their PC directly to their Mac, and they may not have a network available to them. So usually I tell them to use an external hard drive, or just to go out and get like a 16 gigabyte USB thumb drive. And I'll help them transfer. I'll tell them exactly what they have to export on the PC side as far as Outlook contacts and stuff like that. So there's a lot of ways to approach it. So the short answer to that is it's all doable. It just depends on what tools you want to use.
The formatting of the drive on the Mac and the PC, they're different from each other. And I ran into that where I couldn't access my Windows files, and it was as simple as downloading a thing called Paragon, and
NTFS formatted drives, they are read-only on the Mac, meaning that you can see them, but you really can't open files or do any kind of file manipulation. So there is a $19 application, as Antonio said, called Paragon NTFS that you simply install, and that allows you to have complete access to NTFS formatted hard drives.
One of my big criticisms of JAWS is that because of the third-party product, if I click on a link on a website and the web page changes, it throws the JAWS cursor off of its position. I spend a lot of time crawling the cursor back to where I was on the previous page. Since the Apple system is more integrated in the operating system, is that going to be less of a problem on an Apple, that cursor position is preserved as I go from page to page?
It's really a statement of web accessibility than whether it's Windows or Mac. You got to remember that web accessibility, as I often say when I get to the Safari part of the training, and I think Antonio could tell you, one of my famous lines is that any 8-year-old could design a website. Doesn't mean it's a good website, but any 8-year-old could design a website. There's a tools out there. The problem is that more than half of the web designers out there don't even think that blind people use computers, let alone, you know what a screen reader is. Whether you're experiencing a JAWS issue or an actual accessibility issue, I'm not going to whether it's the problem of Freedom Scientific or not, but I can only say from experience, from the websites that I have browsed, I really have not run into any issues that you're describing like that. But that doesn't mean that you can't throw a website at me and I might experience that.
This past week, I was introduced to Google Chrome, and I tried using it with JAWS. I also tried it with Chrome blocks in the Windows environment so that I could access Google Docs and Google Drive and all that stuff. Does that do any better on the Mac than it does in Windows? Because I was very disappointed.
No, it's Google's problem. They simply have decided that you have to use their Chrome box to be able to access their documents. And I'm not a fan of Chrome box on the Windows or the Mac for that. I'm not a fan of Google for a lot of reasons, but that's a Google problem.
I was trying to use a Mac to access a website for my timeshare. They had sent me a document that was, you know, a link to a document, and I went there, and not only could I not access it with VoiceOver, but it wasn't visible on the screen either, visually. And when I went home and did it on the Windows machine, I had no problem. And I suspect that it had something to do with Flash. Can you talk?
Probably Flash, yeah. Or it could be the problem too is some web designers only design the website while using Internet Explorer or just Firefox or Internet Explorer. I've had issues on Windows, believe it or not, where I've tried to access websites with Firefox and they haven't been accessible. But when I went over to Internet Explorer,
yeah,
I had no problems with it. So it could be as simple as that the developer just did not design the website at all with Safari on the Mac. And that's not even really a VoiceOver issue. Yeah. It's just the fact that they haven't designed it for. And I know, like, my sister-in-law does real estate. They use a, I can't think of the name of the MLS or something like that. There's mm-hmm. a website that real estate agents use, and they make no bones about it. They always tell you if you're using a Mac, you're not going to have the same experience, and they just haven't gotten around to updating it for use on Mac.
Is there a way to get around the Flash issue? Is there any kind of third party?
There's an extension called Click to Flash for Safari that works really well. There's a second one too, and I can't think of the name of the extension. There's Click to Flash, and there's a second one that I use that will sometimes do a really nice job. If there is an HTML5 version of the website, like, for example, YouTube has an HTML5 version of the website, you might want to try accessing that instead.
I'm a professional musician, as most of you know. I use GarageBand for composition. What I'm wondering, I've been fighting this since I've been on the Mac, when is Logic going to become accessible?
They're supposedly working on it. Pro Tools is also really on its way to accessibility. I think if you use, what is it, Pro Tools version 10, I think it's supposedly very accessible. But Logic is something I know that they are definitely working on, and they're definitely aware of it. The when part, I can't say because I don't really have any, you know, connections as far as that goes. I can ask around. I know a couple of guys who have, let's say, you know, more direct contact with that area than I do.
Amy, I know you recently got a Mac. Can you elaborate all on maybe the things that you found that it does better?
I'm still relatively new at it because I haven't had the time I'd like to have to devote to it. It boots up so much faster than Windows. I have a MacBook Air, the new MacBook Air, the 11-inch. It boots up so fast. I mean, I hit that button and it boots up within 3-4 seconds. Now, one thing that my son, who's had a MacBook Pro for several years, tells me that the more crap I put on it, the longer it's going to take to boot, like anything else.
Yeah, not much longer, because I have a MacBook Pro and when I first got it, it took maybe 2 or 3 seconds, and I've had it for a year and a half and put plenty of junk on it and maybe a couple of seconds more to that.
Yeah. The other thing that I like was when I first got the computer, if you hit the button and then you don't do anything, VoiceOver will come up automatically. So you don't, you know what I mean? It's not like, you know, when we're talking today about going through and installing your screen reader and all that with Windows, it's not like that with VoiceOver. If you leave it on and you don't touch anything, they kind of figure out that you're waiting for something to happen and you don't know what to do.
During the setup process. Yeah.
During the setup process. One thing we haven't talked about here, but I know there are a lot of people who are iOS users in the room. I have found it really nice to be able to sync my devices. So, for example, I have a podcast client, Downcast, that I like very much. And I set it up. I allowed iCloud services on both my Mac and on my iPhone. So now all my podcasts are synchronized. So it doesn't matter whether I'm using my iPhone or I'm using the Mac, the MacBook Air, any podcasts I've, you know, updated, get updated. Anything I've deleted is gone. And that's really nice. There's just a lot of synchronicity. I like mail on the Mac. I find mail on the Mac to be really pretty easy, and I've gotten pretty good at it. Where I get stuck, for example, sometimes I find, and this is just because I'm new, I think, but some of the keyboard commands are a little to get used to.
Yeah, they're different.
They're different, and there's several keys, so...
That's where Keyboard Commander and Numpad Commander come into play, but I'm not, you know, again, we're just doing basics here, I'm trying to make is they're all workarounds.
And I know, like, Nav, for even Quick Nav, for example, really makes the web browser, that's one thing, boy, I love... You can turn a feature called Quick Nav on. It allows you to move very quickly by whatever
yes.
element you designate. That makes web browsing a lot faster. Yes, you can do it in Windows, and I certainly do, but it just makes it much faster. There are times when where I get stuck is the default button it'll say such and such is the default button, but if I hit the button command, it doesn't always do what I think it's going to do. But that's, again, user inexperience. The thing I like, though, is when you first start your Mac, it gives you a voiceover tutorial. So the first thing you do is learn enough about your screen reader so you can get started. I'm not a person who's an automatic Mac user in the sense that the paradigm is still something I'm struggling to learn, but I had my mail, my network, and all that set up within about an hour and a half.
I don't remember what it's called, but you can set it so that the, for lack of a better word, the mouse pad on the Apple enables you to
yeah.
use gestures
yep.
like we use on voice.
Yes. Yeah, it's called Trackpad Commander. It's the multi-touch trackpad on the laptops, the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro, or if you go out and you get the Magic Trackpad for the iMac, it basically allows you to use the same gesture structure that you use on the iPhone or the iPad to control your Mac. Plus, you also could create custom gestures on the Mac, which you can't do on the iPhone or the iPad. It has definitely helped a couple of my clients as far as familiarity goes. Now, you know, I'll say this, you know, VoiceOver's strength is certainly the keyboard, but if you are a gesture person, you could pretty much carry out, you know, the tasks that you would be used to doing on your iPhone in the same way.
Is there a good Daisy file reader or Daisy player for the Mac?
The answer is yes, but I can't think of the name of the one that I use off the top of my head.
Updating the Mac is really pretty easy. I actually updated to Mavericks without much difficulty, and it was a pretty seamless, easy process. Is there a battery? You know how you can hit a key in Windows and it'll tell you your battery status with your screen reader? I have not found a way to do that. I found a workaround. You go through the menus and so forth.
There is no command, but I could send you an Apple script. You could set up a keyboard commander.
Okay.
Like I have a keyboard commander shortcut that activates that battery script, so mm-hmm. I could just do, you know, right option B and I hear my battery status. So I can always send you that if you need it.
What are you using as a standard two-track audio editor on the Mac?
Well, Audacity is what I basically have been using to edit my podcasts. Amadeus and Audacity are completely accessible, and there are some other choices out there. That's the thing that I have really found over the last couple of years, is a lot of these third-party companies are starting to get it as far as making their products accessible, because the thing about Apple applications that are done in Cocoa, which is the native programming language of the Mac, accessibility is built right into it. Even a developer, quote, with half a brain can make their application accessible if they just follow simple guidelines that the Apple developer website suggests. So it's good that I'm starting to see that a lot of applications out of the box have VoiceOver accessibility right there. No, well, the operating system is based, it's BSD, which is Berkeley system. It's basically a flavor of Unix, is the underpinnings of the actual Mac OS X. You can email me. My name is John Panarese, P like in Peter, Anarese. The email address is John, John, at MacForTheBlind.com, MacForTheBlind.com. The website is simply www.MacForTheBlind.com. And you can reach the office 631-724-4479.
Are you setting most people up to use VMware or Bootcamp?
If the person needs Windows, I'm recommending VM over Bootcamp, only because VM is a bit easier to deal with, and, you know, Bootcamp can have other problems in the long term that VM doesn't have. If you want Bootcamp, that's fine, but what I normally recommend is VMware Fusion.
Apple has an accessibility support number, but even if you're dealing with your regular Apple folks, the one thing they don't complain about is your screen reader. They may not know as much about how use it, but they don't complain about it, and that's not their first assumption that
they
that's
be
what's.
Like, oh, it's your screen.
Yeah. They don't do that. I did have to call the regular Apple support for something. The guy didn't know what he was doing necessarily. I probably taught him more than he did teach me about VoiceOver, which was really stretching it because I was pretty new. But I will say they didn't complain. They were like, oh, you're using VoiceOver? Great. Let me figure out how to help you.
They have also good training workshops, which I'm going to sign up there. I think it's like $100, but you can do as much as one-to-one training with them, with a VoiceOver expert in their stores.
People have told me trainers go in the one-on-one situation. Be careful, because sometimes trainers try to teach you the Mac and VoiceOver from a sighted perspective,
yep.
And it doesn't serve you well.
Yeah, I've gone to my Apple store, and luckily there is a guy there who knows a lot about VoiceOver, but he firmly admitted that I was going to teach them as much as they were going to teach me. Thank you, John, very much. I'm glad we got the Skype thing to work.